Welcome to the MIFA podcast. My name is Jonathan Hughes, and I'm the host of the MIFA podcast. And again, I'm joined by Julie Shields. Jutina. Hello, Julie.
Oh, hey, Jonathan.
Today, we're going to be speaking with MIFA's Director of College Relations, Stephanie Wells, about MIFA's After the Acceptance series of webinars. Students are receiving their acceptances and their financial aid offers around this time, and this is the webinar series that's designed to help them compare their offers, so we're going to hear about that later. But first, Julie, this is where we usually talk about some news or some industry updates, but we thought instead of doing that, we'd let folks know about some webinars that MIFA has coming up. So do you want to talk about the first one?
Sure, yeah. In this very challenging year, we're getting a lot of questions right now from high school juniors and high school parents of high school juniors, you know, who are kind of beginning the admissions process during this time where their school year has looked different and all of that. So we're going to have a webinar, and it's going to be on March 22nd at 6:30 p.m. And it's really going to be a question and answer with admissions experts. So mostly for juniors and parents of juniors, though, you know, sophomore families are welcome as well. And we really have a great panel of guests from all different types of colleges, which I think is important when you're thinking about the admissions process. So we have representatives from WPI, Worcester State University, Brandeis University, Olin College, and Quinsigamond Community College. And really, we encourage families to come and ask your questions. We know some of the questions that are out there. We're getting them, like, what's happening with standardized testing and how do I handle that? Now that I can't visit colleges, how am I supposed to figure out what colleges I like? Some others, like, if I didn't get to know my teachers as well this year because I've been on Zoom, can I count on them writing good recommendations? I mean, we just have a lot of questions. What kinds of decisions are students making during this time? So we have some we will ask of the experts, but please bring your own questions. And we really hope that this is a lively session and a lot of information will get communicated.
Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like it will be. So hopefully everyone will check that out. We can include some links too in the show notes about where you can go and click on that link and register for the event if you wanted to do that. And we'll also include a link to the next presentation, which we're going to talk about, the next webinar, which is what, Julie?
Oh, yeah. And should I say it out loud too, that it's these webinars can be accessed at MIFA.org/events. And you can go in and register and, then we'll send you a reminder too. And we also we record these sessions. So then we can send them out to you afterwards if you want to share them with your friends. And the other one is a little bit more focused on the financing piece. So that's going to be on April 1st at 6:30 p.m. And this is more for high school seniors and their families who have applied to college, hopefully have applied for financial aid or receiving financial aid offers and trying to compare and make an affordable decision. But we know that lots has changed this year, and people are nervous about finances. One, because maybe financial situations have changed. And two, just because the future is a little bit more uncertain. And so this is a webinar about appeals. And if you receive your financial aid offer and it doesn't seem like it's enough to be able for the student to attend, what can you do? Is there anything you can do, or do you just have to say, no, we can't go there? And so we're going to talk about what you can appeal, what are the reasons for appeals, how different colleges handle appeals. And again, we have a number of experts. So we're going to have Michelle Tufaux from Quinsigamond Community College, Ryan Forsyth from Worcester State University, Iris Godis from Dean College, Gail Holt from Amherst College, and Ebony Marsala from Northeastern University, Bill Smith from Stonehill College. So that is a great panel who will give you more specifics about making an appeal and how to do that, when it's an appeal that is more likely to be considered, and what are some of the things they aren't able to respond to help you think through all of that. So yeah, we encourage you, if either of these sound appealing,
no pun intended.
Then you register.
Yeah, and you know, we did the appeals webinar, I think, was it for the first time last year?
Last year.
And it was huge. So we had to add a second one, I think. And so we know that there's a lot of people who are in this circumstance where they want to know how to go about doing this. So if you are in that position, you're not the only one by any means. So as Julie said, you can go to MIFA.org/events and look up those webinars, and we will include links in the show notes to those specifically where you can go and register. And now it's time to go to the MIFA mailbag. So these are questions that have come in from customers over the past 2 weeks and answered by our college guidance experts. If you have any questions, remember, please reach out to us at collegeplanning@mifa.org or call us at 1-800-449-MIFA. You can also reach us on social media, on Facebook under MIFA, and at Twitter at MIFA Tweets. It's our Twitter handle, at MIFA Tweets. And our first question is from Lizzie, and it goes like this. If a citizen whose parents do not live in this country applies for the FAFSA, how do they go about it? Are they entitled to any money from the government? So this is the question that we get a lot.
Sure, yes. So a student who is a U.S. citizen or permanent resident is eligible for federal financial aid, another financial aid, and should apply. So absolutely, the student is the financial aid recipient. The student is the applicant. So yes, apply using the FAFSA and any other forms that the college requires. But the way that you would handle, the FAFSA collects parental information for students. And so the way to handle that is if the parents are not U.S. citizens or permanent residents, then the parents can just put zeros in the Social Security number field and then complete the FAFSA the same. They can do everything the same way. They can put in their income, all of that. And then the only place it differs is because the parents don't have a Social Security number, they can't electronically sign the form because they can't get what's called an FSA ID, a federal student aid ID, without the Social Security. So the families can't sign the form. So all they need to do then is print the signature page, physically sign it, and then mail that to the address that's on that printed form. So that's the difference. So I know if students' parents live elsewhere, it might take some back and forth phone calls, Zoom calls like this to get all of that done. But it can be done, and the student should definitely file and apply for financial aid.
Thank you, Julie. And our second question, as it tends to be these days, is a UPlan question. And this comes from Becky, and she writes, I had a question about investing in the UPlan and about the cumulative percentages. I'll talk about that. What happens if our child chooses a school where he has over 100% of the tuition and mandatory fees? For example, he won't be in college until 2033, and we've been investing into the year 2035. And currently for the year 2035, he's at 116% of the tuition and mandatory fees for Bridgewater University. Obviously, we have 10 years to go to keep investing. And so if he chooses one of those colleges and universities where the percentage of a given year is over 100%, what happens? Would we end up receiving money back? Could we move it to a year where he might not be at 100%? Could we move it to another child? Good question. So I'm going to have to explain the UPlan a little bit again. And the way the UPlan works is you put in a certain amount of money in one or more years that your child is going to be in college for. And those are your maturity years. So in this example, Becky's son is going to be starting in the year 2033. So she's probably picking the years 2033, 34, 35, and 36. And so for the year 2035, his projected junior year, she has put in an amount of money that means that she's purchased over 100% of tuition and fees in that year, 116% at Bridgewater State University. Now, let's say he goes to Bridgewater State University. What happens to that extra 16% that you purchased? So what happens is we can only pay out to the college 100% of tuition or mandatory fees. If you have money left over, then you have whatever percentage, you know, whatever value that percentage is at that college, you can use it in a later year if you wanted to do that. If you can't use it in a later year, if that's the latest year or you've still got money left after that, you can always cash out and get what you put in plus the interest back, or you can transfer the funds over to another beneficiary if that's an option. If there's a younger child there, you can transfer the funds over to that child. Now, the child has to be within about 6 years of when the funds mature, because we can only hold on to them until about 6 years after they mature. It's a good problem to have if you have over 100% of tuition and fees purchased. So if you do have over that amount, you have some extra money you can either transfer over to another beneficiary, or you can cash out and use for things like books or supplies or room and board that are not covered by the U plan. So so again, a good situation to find yourself in, and hopefully that makes sense. If you have any more questions about the U plan, you can reach out to us. Actually, if you have any questions about anything at all, you can reach out to us at collegeplanning@mifa.org. You can call us at 1-800-449-MIFA. And as I said before, there is a team of college guidance experts that are waiting to answer your calls. So let's go to my talk with our good friend Stephanie Wells, Director of College Relations at MIFA, about the After the College Acceptance webinar series. Stephanie Wells is MIFA's Director of College Relations, and she's here to discuss MIFA's After the College Acceptance campaign, an annual program that she's been instrumental in developing and spearheading. And I could go on about it, but that's what you're here for, Stephanie. So making her debut, very excited about this, is my friend Stephanie Wells. Hello, Stephanie.
Thank you, Jonathan. Happy to be here. This is my first podcast, so I'm pretty excited to I hope I don't blow up on the internet and get too famous overnight, but I'm really excited to do my first podcast. You know, this stuff is very exciting. So, but yeah, we're here to talk about our After the College Acceptance program. And that was created, about a little over 10, 12 years ago. But right. We got this idea from some colleges that we work with who said, you know, you guys do a really great job of helping people through the financial aid process. Then you help them pay their bill. But there's this, you know, little gap in between from when they apply for financial aid and have to pay the bill that, you know, families still need assistance during that time and understanding their award letters. So that's where the After the College Acceptance program was created. And we've gone on to grow the program and create some new tools. So I'm looking forward to talking about it today.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, comparing award letters, and that's one of the things that I always think about first when I think about the After the College Acceptance series, is that, you know, we help people to who might be looking at a bunch of different award letters to compare them. What else do we expect people to be able to get out of this presentation?
Yeah, so we hope that they'll be able to understand their award letters or their award offers, their financial aid award offers from colleges, and be able to break those offers down and really understand the different components before they commit to a school. So before the student commits to a school, to really understand what they got from each school, and most critically, can they afford it, and what is their plan to pay? So we can help them through that whole process before they even commit to a school. Now, of course, if a family comes to us and they've already committed, you know, in May or June, then we can help them out in much the same way. But a big part of this program is really making sure that they have a plan before they make that deposit. And it's, you know, it's a great time. You know, students are
receiving their awards, they're receiving acceptances. So we're not dealing with hypotheticals anymore. You know, we work with a lot of families in the fall and in the winter before they've even applied maybe to schools or have heard back, but now they know where the student's gotten into. We've narrowed that list down just by those acceptances. And in many cases, over the next month and month and a half or so, they'll be getting financial aid offers from those schools. So we'll have real numbers to deal with and real numbers to help them out and help them understand. So it's not hypotheticals. It's not what if. It's, okay, we know what we're dealing with now. Now let's create a plan to pay that bill, you know, and make sure that it is an affordable option for the family.
Yeah, it's such an important time, and it's such a good time to get that information. I know that, you know, back in non-COVID years, we would be out at high schools doing these presentations and would actually encourage people to bring their offers with them so that we could sort of go over them with us. Of course, everything that we do now is virtual, in addition to offering these seminars virtually as webinars. We do have some tools on the website to help families and students to make these decisions. I wonder if you could talk about some of those.
Yeah, definitely. So one of my favorite tools on the MEFA site is what's called the College Cost Calculator. So if you just type in College Cost Calculator in the search bar of MEFA.org, you'll be able to find that. And it's basically an online spreadsheet, so to speak, that helps families put in their award offers as well as the cost at each school and any money that they want to contribute, maybe from savings or payment plans, to get a true bottom line number. And the calculator breaks out the, you know, grant aid, the gift money, the good stuff, as well as, you know, maybe student loans or loans that the college has put in an award letter, to really help the students and families see side by side. You can enter up to four colleges. What does each cost for room, board, tuition fees, as well as who's giving me free money from the college, who's, you know, packing on a lot of loans in there, and really getting to that bottom number, the true cost at each school, because sometimes it might look like a good offer at the bottom of that award letter, but if it's filled with a lot of loans, then that's really not that might not be the best offer. And, you know, the financial aid offer is not the only criteria families need to think about when deciding on where the student's going to go to school. Of course, there's academics and good fit, you know, location, things like that. But the finance part is a very important piece of it. And, you know, it is a big investment for families. They want to make sure they're getting a good return on their investment. So this tool can really help them. Even if, you know, a family has a lot of schools that they want to put on a spreadsheet, that they can just use this calculator to create their own spreadsheet if they wanted to do that. So we actually will help families one-on-one if they need help one-on-one. You know, in the past, like you mentioned, we'd be there in person. They could bring their award letters to a after the college acceptance seminar, but they can email them to us too. And we can do one-on-one appointments through Zoom, just like we're doing now. And it's very easy. And we did a lot of that last spring. We had to, you know, cancel all of our in-person programming and do everything online. And we had a lot of parents schedule meetings, and we helped them through the process. So that's one, the College Cost Calculator, but we also have a great loan payment calculator because we know, you know, a good majority of families might need to borrow. And it's just a, you know, unfortunate fact of paying for college these days. But we really want to make sure that borrowing is a last resort. We want to help families through the other portions of the financial aid award or letter, looking at savings and maybe payment plans that are interest-free before they borrow. Then when they do need to borrow, we have a great calculator on our site where they can put in different amounts that they're thinking about borrowing based on the different schools or based on, you know, what they might want to put in for with savings or, you know, hold on to. And the calculator will show all the different repayment options that MEFA offers, which there's five of them. And it will show the interest rates and monthly payments, and is very important, the total cost of that loan. So if they make the minimum payment for the full life of that loan, what is that total cost? Just like you would look at that bottom line number on a mortgage, I call it the big scary number, but that's what you're paying. So that's an important number to look at and not shy away from. And it is a great option to show you know, how much a deferred loan that might cost a lot more than maybe an immediate repayment option where you're making payments while the student's in school. You might even get a lower rate if you start making payments right away. So I think it helps open families' eyes to the different options and what the cost is for each option as well.
I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about how borrowing fits into the overall picture when it comes to paying for college, that, you know, it's not necessarily the first thing that you should think of.
Right, right. And what really what families I like to call past, present, and future income. So the first thing we want to look at is look at your past income in the form of savings. Do you have any savings? Has grandma or grandpa saved in a 529 plan? You know, really assess and take note of all those, you know, maybe old savings bonds that the student got when they went to their first communion or something like that, and figure out what you have and how you want to use it. Do you want to use it all up front, or do you want to spread it out over 4 years? And, you know, some families haven't been able to save, and that's okay. Most families haven't been able to save the full amount, and some families haven't been able to afford to save anything, and that's okay. Then you look at present income in the form of, you know, cash on hand, you know, taking money out of your paycheck each month, maybe on a monthly payment plan through the college. And once you've exhausted those resources, and you still owe money to the school, then you have to look at future income in the form of borrowing. And that is, you know, unfortunately, something that many families have to do. The great thing about working with MIFA is that we really do our best to offer the absolute lowest rates possible. Being a nonprofit, quasi-state authority here in Massachusetts, we want to make sure that if families need to borrow, that they're doing it responsibly. And I think, you know, working with MIFA, families do get that sense of, you know, trusted authority, that they know they're getting good advice, good solid advice. We're not trying to, you know, bog families down with loans. We really want them to look at every other option before they borrow. And then if they need to borrow, then, you know, that's okay. But they also want to make sure that they're looking at that monthly payment, you know, especially if they're deferring the loan. That's another pitfall that folks fall into. And unfortunately, after they borrow for 4 years, it might be too late. You know, they have their monthly payments that are due and they can't afford them. Or they regret that they borrowed so much, and students find themselves in this situation a lot. You know, and above and beyond the federal student loans, you really are looking at private loans, such as loans through MIFA, which often require a co-signer. So, you know, maybe mom and dad are co-signing a loan for the student, thinking, okay, well, Johnny or Sally, they'll be able to pay this loan off when they get out of school. But they really want to put the pause button before they sign on the dotted line to make sure, can Johnny or Sally make those payments? What kind of career are they getting into? Will they be able to afford their federal student loans as well as, you know, these co-sign loans with mom and dad, and maybe pay rent or, you know, buy a new car when they get out of school? There's going to be, you know, other commitments with their, you know, paychecks month to month. So you really want to think ahead 4 years. Can I afford it in 4 years? Not just, can I afford this 1 year?
Such a good point. I mean, one of the things they say, and you know, this is not just 1 year. People have that financial aid offer in front of them. They have the balance. They think if they can just make it through this year, they'll worry about next year when it comes. But as I always say, next year is going to come. And so one of the things we do say is to consider a four-year strategy.
The four-year strategy is really just looking ahead. So, you know, not focusing only on year one. Can I make the numbers work this year? It is an annual process. You do have to apply for financial aid each year. You still have to fill out that FAFSA every year, although it gets easier after year one. And if you do borrow, you're going to likely need to borrow for years 2, 3, and 4 if you have to borrow for year one. So it is an annual process. You can't apply for all 4 years at once, but you do want to take that first year loan if you're thinking of borrowing, look at that monthly payment, multiply it by 4 just as an estimate. If the first year is going to cost you $200 a month for $20,000 loan, then you're probably going to be looking at 4 $20,000 loans for $80,000. About a, you know, $800,000 payment for all 4. Can you afford that? So you really do have to look ahead. And also looking even beyond those 4 years, is the student thinking about going to medical school or law school? Is that part of their plan? because they're going to be borrowing likely for that as well. And that's an investment. So you really want to think about that monthly payment and look at the option for undergraduate school. Look at your different options that the student's been accepted to. I know it's hard when the student has their dream school in mind, and typically that's always the most expensive one, or it seems like it when we're talking to families, unfortunately. But are there other great options, maybe at a public school or something that might be giving more financial aid? Sometimes the private schools that are, you know, have very big endowments are giving just as much aid as maybe a public school. Mm-hmm. So you really have to look at each school side by side. You know, maybe consider community college for a couple of years. We're in a pandemic. A lot of students are commuting online to school anyway. So maybe for a year or two to save some money, get some credits under your belt, go to community college and then transfer. It's not necessarily where you start, it's where you end up. So there's lots of different ways to reduce that cost, you know, really looking at that four-year plan.
That's perfect. And I think one other thing, and you did again hit on it, but I want to emphasize it again to the parents in particular, is that, you know, the students already have their federal student loans as part of their financial aid package. So, and you said, you know, most students are going to need a co-applicant or co-signer to be approved for private loans. Right. And I've heard over the years that I've worked here, and I know you've heard it too, a lot of parents say, I know it's I'm on the loan, but it's not really my loan. It's really my student's loan. And you know, if you're a co-applicant on a loan, that's your loan too. You're equally responsible. So when you're looking at monthly payments and how much you're going to be having to pay back after school, that repayment amount is going to make a big difference, not just to the students, but to whoever else is on that loan too. So you want to make sure that's manageable for them. So Now, this is a time where I think we're just starting to get students are starting to receive their financial aid offers and their acceptances, and this will go on for a little while. And what is the date that students have to make a decision by?
Well, in typical years, it's going to be May 1st. Historically, mm-hmm. it's always been May 1st. That's a national deadline to deposit at one of the schools the student was accepted to. So if the student was waitlisted, you don't want to hold out hope that you're going to get off the waitlist, because you might not get off the waitlist. Mm-hmm. And even if you do get off the waitlist, you might not get much financial aid, if any. So you really have to focus on the schools that the student was accepted to and commit to one, typically by May 1st. Last year, you know, because of the pandemic, a lot of schools extended that to June 1st or well into May. I've heard of a few schools who have said May 3rd is going to be the decision deadline this year. I've heard, you know, a lot of colleges, some schools are delaying sending out financial aid awards a couple weeks later than typical. I know I've heard of a lot of Ivy Leagues doing that to give students, you know, more time. So look at the schools. Acceptance letter, that's going to tell you what the deadline is, where you'll have to deposit and accept your financial aid at the school the student's attending. So just go by that school's deadline, but typically it's around May 1st. But I know, you know, schools are somewhat flexible, but I can't speak for every school. So you do want to look at your individual school and make sure that you know what that deadline is at that particular school. But it's usually around May 1st.
So, you know, this being a special year puts me in mind of something that I know that you wanted to talk about on the show, and that is special circumstances. Mm-hmm. If a student has special circumstances that weren't reflected in their financial aid forms and thus not reflected in the offer. So can you maybe talk about what some special circumstances may be that students may be experiencing or families may experience, and what they can do to deal with those?
Yeah, definitely. So of course, this last year, a lot of families have struggled, as we know. In any given year, families are struggling from time to time. But this past year has been particularly brutal for a lot of families because of the pandemic. And people have lost maybe even just part-time jobs, or lost overtime, or lost their jobs completely. And that's a huge special circumstance. And colleges are well-versed in helping families through those special circumstances. If you think about it, a lot of families may have applied for financial aid last November of 2020, for example. It's now, you know, March. It's going to be April soon. Maybe somebody has lost their job since they applied for financial aid, or, you know, maybe mom or dad has, you know, reduced their hours so that they can stay home with the kids who are homeschooling. You know, whatever the circumstance might be, there's lots of them. So that's going to be the biggest one this year as it was last year. But there are other things that could pop up, such as, you know, we saw what our, you know, friends in Texas have gone through with, you know, the cold weather and how it really, you know, destroyed a lot of homes with burst pipes. And that's a special circumstance. It's, you know, natural disasters, hurricanes, things like that, that can really put your family in a financial constraint in some way, shape or form. You know, those are a couple of examples, but we really recommend anything that is not shown on your financial aid award letter that you think is going to impact your ability to pay, whatever it might be, get in touch with the college that the student wants to go to and see if it's something they would consider. Oftentimes, they'll have a form that you need to fill out online, or they might want you to send an email. Be prepared to provide documentation, unemployment records, things like that, to show the school what your current situation is and see if there's anything they can do to reevaluate your circumstances and go from there. But definitely, you know, focus on this one or two schools that the student is hoping to enroll in and go through that process with that school, because schools want to help these families. You know, they want the student to enroll. They want to do the best that they can to help them and make sure that they're taking everything into account. But they, if they don't know what's going on in your family, they can't help you. So you really need to raise your hand and say, I need help. It's okay to need help. And it's okay to ask for it.
Right. No, that's, and that's, I think one of the things that we find ourselves saying over and over again at MIFA, which is to call the financial aid office at the college, right? Reach out to the financial aid office. Don't be afraid to do that. I think somebody even went so far as to say, find a friend in the financial aid office to talk to. So it definitely something that you will hear if you attend the after the college acceptance webinar. By the way, if you do want to attend, which is, you can visit MIFA.org/collegebound.
/collegebound. Yep.
Well, Stephanie, I would never know that this was your first podcast appearance. You did very well.
Thank you. And the dog and the cat didn't bother us, so that was good.
Well, thank you so much for being on. It was a real pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan.
All right, well, that about does it for us. Thanks for listening to the show, everyone. Remember, if you like the show, please subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're hearing this. And if you could, do us an extra favor and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. That would be just fine. Julie, thank you for joining me today once again.
You're welcome. Thank you, John.
Always a pleasure. Until next time, thanks, everyone.